Gene Dielman Review, Is It Really the Greatest Movie Ever Made? By John Nolte on April 1, 2023. Starting in 1952, the British Film Institute, BFI, has published a decennial sight and sound poll of the 100 greatest movies ever made. Last year, in the name of that lunacy called equity, the BFI dramatically lowered its standards to open the poll up to people who have no business rubbing elbows with the likes of Martin Scorsese, Paul Schrader, Sofia Coppola, John Carpenter, and Walter Hill. Predictably, the 2022 results of this once-admired poll are not only absurd, the results were rigged. We now know a bunch of woke-tards conspired to game the poll to ensure a feminist film directed by a woman landed in first place. That movie is the late Chantal Ackerman's Gene Dielman, 23 Quai du Commerce, 1080 Bruxelles, 1975, which I saw decades ago and watched again this week. Gene Dielman is a movie easily ridiculed, a 201-minute foreign film with no musical score, no close-ups, and extremely long takes where the camera never moves. If that's not enough material for ridicule, everyone speaks French. Back in December, when the now-diminished sight and sound results were released, I wrote this about the greatest movie ever made. Regarding the new number one, Gene Dielman, 23, Quai du Commerce, 1080 Bruxelles, 1975, let's not play games. It's there because a woman directed it. That's not merit. That's identity. Gene Dielman is an intriguing movie. It does cast a spell, but it's a rough sit and every bit as long, 200 minutes, as its title. We spend nearly 4 hours watching a prostitute go through a handful of mundane days, cooking, cleaning, etc., until she snaps. I get the point, but I could have gotten the point in half the time. If sight and sounds film illiterates insisted on having a woman at the top, I can think of five superior Catherine Bigelow movies. Here are my thoughts after a second look. Gene Dielman's plot is deceptively simple. Our protagonist, Gene Dielman, an outstanding and alluring Delphine Seyrig, is a 40-ish, unmarried widow living in a small apartment in Brussels with her bookish and entitled teenage son, Sylvain, Jean de Cordy. Jean's mundane life is built on her obsessive need for routine. Over 2.5 days, using only medium shots, we watch Jean march through this routine, including a male client's daily arrival. To make ends meet, Jean has turned to prostitution. Once you understand where the plot is headed, Gene Dielman's first hour unspools like the movie Gambit, 1966, where we see how a complicated heist should happen. This allows us to appreciate how badly the actual heist goes. In this same vein, the first hour of Gene Dielman establishes how our protagonist's day is supposed to unfurl. In takes as long as 5 minutes, we watch the precise and tidy Gene cook, clean, greet her client, make the bed, fold clothes, take a bath, scrub the tub, set the table, greet her son, spoon out supper, knit a sweater, make coffee, shine shoes, and wash dishes. Without saying so, the tightly wound Gene Dielman obviously sees her routine as a ritual. It's been said that movies are real life with the boring parts removed. Gene Dielman is, by design, the antithesis of that. We see only the boring parts. The interesting parts, like what happens between the hooker and the client in the bedroom, are removed. Spoilers. Dorothy Striptease Sodream. Spoilers. As days 2 and 3 unfold, what Ackerman, who also wrote the script, has in mind becomes clear. Because hour one familiarized us with Jean's perfect routine, the smallest deviations from that routine, a dropped spoon, a light left on, a dish left uncovered, take on the kind of dramatic weight that has you asking, what's going on? Where is this headed? Naturally, these questions draw you into the story. Suddenly these tedious chores take on a larger meaning. Yesterday, within the time frame of the move, watching Jean wash dishes for 5 minutes had you stirring in your seat. Today, you're thinking, oh, no. She forgot to rinse the plates. Jean never raises her voice, never hurries, or expresses much of anything. Like the changes in her routine, what's roiling within her is hardly noticeable. This is a woman who prides herself on self-control. So when she goes to a cafe, and her usual table is occupied, there's not even a scowl. Nevertheless, we do sense her tighten up a bit. Then she orders a coffee and leaves without drinking it. That might not seem like much, but it is everything in the context of this Kubrickian starkness. Finally, After more than 3 hours, the big event happens. Then you rewind the movie in your head and realize you were watching a woman coming unglued. To say that I admired Gene Dielman more this time would be an understatement. Is it the greatest movie ever made? No. But it is unquestionably a great movie. A bold and unique work deserving of respect. Gene Dielman did two things great art does. First, it cast a spell and held it. I was mesmerized. Second, rather than tell me what to think, it made me think. And when I say it made me think, I don't just mean about what might happen next. At the risk of sounding ridiculous, it made me think about life. Here's what I mean. Most every review of Gene Dielman I've come across reads like this. Gene Dielman is a window into a world hidden from male and professional society, and defined by rigorous repetition and estrangement. Abandoned by the death of her husband, barely looked at by her entitled son, and treated as a sexual commodity by her customers, Jean is a woman subtly used and abused. She's truly alone, and Ackerman's fixed gaze and unswerving consideration elicit sympathy for her tedious and thankless life. In doing so, it also generates outrage on behalf of her and all those who endure similar monotonous fates. Beneath its ordinary and tempered facade, Gene Dielman simmers with feminist indignation at a socio-cultural paradigm that relegates so many to exploitation. Or, as evoked by Gene's mechanical movements and passive countenance, to live as obedient automatons. Well, that's not what I saw. In fact, I find the widely held feminist interpretation of Gene Dielman absurd and counterfactual. Here are the facts. Gene Dielman is a healthy, attractive young woman born into the mid-20th century with enough to eat, a comfortable apartment with electricity, modern appliances, and hot and cold running water. What's more, she's not isolated. On the contrary, she lives in the middle of a modern city. Most importantly, as the Spear exposition informs us, Gene Dielman chose to get married, have a child, and remain unmarried after her husband's death 6 years ago. In other words, Gene Dielman is not a victim of the patriarchy or a socio-cultural paradigm that relegates so many to exploitation. The only thing Gene Dielman is a victim of is her own choices. Yes, her son treats her like a servant. Well, whose fault is that? She raised the kid. Is it society's fault she's a hooker? The movie itself makes clear that the answer is a firm no. As Gene goes about her daily chores, almost every working person she encounters is a woman. Therefore, nothing is stopping Gene from getting a respectable job. Writing for Criterion, author Yvonne Margiles points to a moment involving one of Gene's neighbors to make her case that Gene Dielman is a story of feminist oppression. Teehee neighbor, heard by the door, and played by Ackerman herself, describes how, shopping for her husband's dinner, and still undecided, she ended up getting the same expensive cut of meat as the person in front of her online. Never casual, each of the film's uniquely strange and long-winded monologues expresses some form of gendered pressure. But, again, that's not what I saw. Above and beyond our protagonist being a victim of her own choices, the scene with the neighbor explores a thematic strain of existentialism in Gene Dielman. This sad, neurotic, and unseen woman, this disembodied voice on the other side of a door, is a housewife and new mother so desperate to talk to someone, anyone, that she babbles on about standing in line at the butcher shop. From where I sit, this has nothing to do with repression or gendered pressure. Instead, it speaks to the emptiness of a modern life where abundance spoils us, softens us, and strips us of a sense of purpose. In this short, touching, and brilliantly written monologue, the neighbor expresses the despair of a life filled with so many choices that what kind of meat to purchase becomes a luxury neurosis. If Gene Dielman and her mousy neighbor are victims of anything, it's ingratitude. Both are blessed to live in modern-day Western civilization. Additionally, they are blessed with youth, health, and, yes, children. Nevertheless, both are so spoiled they despair. I'll ask again, whose fault is that? Nothing is stopping either woman from taking classes or going to the library to immerse themselves in the beauty of art and/or learning. This is especially true of Jean, whose son is a full-time student. She has all day to take advantage of the countless pleasures the modern world offers. Instead, she chooses the life she lives. While I sympathize with whatever blinds her to the opportunities available for the taking, I blame only her. Finally, Gene Dielman explores the horrors of godlessness. Religion is never once mentioned. Maybe that's the point. This is a woman entering middle age without God. A mother a few years away from an empty nest without faith. Jean Dielman is staring into the abyss without hope, which can drive anyone crazy. Chantal Ackerman's own life is proof that her masterpiece cannot possibly be about female oppression. On top of repeatedly saying Jean Dielman is not a feminist film, Ackerman was a self-made filmmaker and only 25 when she made Jean Dielman. How could someone so accomplished honestly see Western women as victims? Here's my takeaway after spending 201 minutes with the character of Jean Dielman. Good heavens, lady, you have it all, and still, you whore yourself out and appreciate nothing. Thank you for reminding me to appreciate life, the people in my life, and my faith. To be clear, I am not saying those who interpret Jean Dielman as a feminist statement are wrong. There is no right or wrong when interpreting art. There is only agreement or disagreement. The fact that different people can see the same movie differently is a credit to Ackerman's accomplishment. As I said above, great artists don't tell us what to think. They make us think. Jean Dielman, 23K du Commerce, 1080 Bruxelles is not for everyone. You have to meet it on its own terms, which is challenging. But it is unquestionably a masterwork deserving of a place among our great movies, even if that place is not number one. The tragedy here is that by abusing their invitation, a group of woketards not only proved they weren't mature and sophisticated enough to contribute to sight and sound, they forever undermined a legitimate classic by ensuring it will be remembered only as a cheat, as the notorious beneficiary of a dishonest act of affirmative action. The movie deserves better. So does its creator. Follow John Nolte on Twitter @NolteNC. Follow his Facebook page here.